Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
January 29th, 2008, The Digital Story Show with Derek Story. Today's topic, an updated interview with Julianne Koss. That's right, I had an interview with Julianne way long time ago when Lightroom was still in beta form, and we talked about the potential of Lightroom. I thought it'd be great to visit with Julianne again after Lightroom is out, now that she's using the same version that everyone else is, and after she had taken a sabbatical to organize her whole image library in Lightroom. And we're talking about thousands of images. So I thought, what a great time to find out. Okay, we talked about potential before, now let's talk about how it actually worked. Julianne covers all sorts of really good stuff in this interview. This is a chat that we had in New York during Photo Plus Expo just a few months ago. And I'm running this interview this week because I'm in Las Vegas for PMA. So while I'm in Las Vegas, we'll be visiting with Julianne on the show, and then I'll be gathering information for upcoming shows. So, you know, we just kind of keep all the plates spinning on this. But anyway, Julianne also has a very good conversation about DNG, digital negative. And I asked her, you know, just tell us exactly, in your view, you know, what this is exactly, DNG, and why we would want to use this container for our RAW files instead of just working with the RAW files themselves. I thought that was a pretty interesting part of the conversation. She also talks quite a bit about backing up and when to back up. You know, does she do it on import? Does she do it later on? And then also, why Lightroom over Bridge, or is it really Lightroom over Bridge? Do you use one sometimes and the other times? Lots of good stuff in this interview, so I'm going to roll it right now. And then when we come back, I'll cover a little virtual camera club business, and off to the races we go. But right now, here's Julianne from New York City. I'm here with Julianne Koss, who I know in basically two capacities. I know her as the evangelist for Adobe, and I, for years, went to her Photoshop trainings and walked out of there thinking I knew everything there was to know about Photoshop until I got back home, and then suddenly my mind would go blank, and I'd have to go back and start all over again. I know her as the author of Window Seat, which is we have here, which is a personal project that you took on that turned into a lovely book with beautiful pictures, but not only beautiful pictures, how she made the beautiful pictures in the back, which I think is so important. And then one of the things I want to touch on today, which is becoming one of the experts in Lightroom in terms of you're applying all this wonderful teaching ability that you did with Photoshop, and now you've become one of my favorite Lightroom teachers. And I thought we would talk a little bit about Lightroom today. And, of course, we can touch on other stuff also. How are you doing?
I am doing well.
Yes, you are.
I am.
You look lovely today, I might say.
Thank you.
Yes. So let's start with Lightroom for a second.
Okay.
So tell me about some of the things about Lightroom that, you know, personally resonate with you and you know, that you like.
Okay. So I will say that probably the most important thing for me is just I'm a very tidy person. I'm very organized. And it's very important for me to know where my images are and to, like, kind of have control of them so that I can find them again. And so I did. I took a sabbatical, and I took all of my images off of all of my media, which by media, I mean like SyQuest discs. You know, like, I was pretty far behind. I had magneto optical drives, and so I took all that media off and I put it all on hard drives, took it all off CD, took it all off DVDs, organized it all into folders that were like 4.2 gigs so that I could back them up to DVD, put them on three different hard drives, and actually keyworded my entire image library. And
this is where I have to go.
And I know. And sequence them. Now, when I say keyword, okay, so I'm not like, there's people out there that really keyword. If I put like 4 to 5 keywords per image, to me, that's brilliant. If I have the location and if I have the subject matter, I can probably find that image. Because if I knew that I was like in China, in Beijing, in the Forbidden City, I could go right there, and if I knew it was a bench, I can just enter in those keywords and I can find that image. So for me, that's very, very important because I am shooting a lot, and it's just great to be able to find my images.
And
I
actually,
wish.
I don't want to interrupt on the only wish part here.
That Lightroom had been further along when I was originally doing that.
Yes.
So I did all of that in Bridge. So I had all of my keywords. I did everything in Bridge. Now, though, what I like about Lightroom is that it kind of reminds me what I should be doing. Because it's very easy for me to just say, I'll keyword it later. I'll put my copyright in later.
Right.
You know, and then you don't remember, was that in Munich or Berlin? I have no idea.
Yes.
Yeah, so and I don't want to sit
there
and look
German
at the date.
It's all German to me, right?
All, yeah. Yes. Right. You have to put an umlaut, and it's very confusing.
It's tough. Oh, so, okay, but let's talk about this, because this is one of my favorite features in Lightroom. Part of the reason why I think people don't keyword is because when your pictures are in your computer, you've taken them off your memory card, I know what I want to do is play with the pictures, not keyword.
I know.
You know, and so, I mean, what I really like about this is that the import dialog box, and I want you to talk about for a minute, all the wonderful things you can do with the import dialog box so that when your pictures are in your computer, you can actually play with them.
Yeah. See, that's the best thing for me is that it has trained me. It, like, takes me down the right path, right? So it does all the stuff, and it kind of reminds me to do the stuff. It makes the stuff easy that I don't really want to do. Like all the stuff, like I don't want to keyword my images. I don't want to add my copyright, but you know what? It's all stuff I have to do. So as I import the files, it's my big reminder because it's right there in the dialog box. It's like, okay, if you just put in three keywords right now, as you put in this card, you probably shot this card all in one location. So put in Berlin, put in, you know, whatever. There are infrared images wherever you are, and it just, you're done. And then you don't have to think about it again. So it kind of takes you down the right path. And I like that, not just when you're importing, but then, you know, once you get into the library module, and then you can do, you know, further refining of keywords. And then I can make my collections, and I can rate my images and make sure I have my good ones, and then I can develop them. So it kind of takes you through this step. And I think it's going to be really useful for pro photographers who haven't really established their workflow. And now they can actually pinpoint it and say, okay, these are the 10 steps that I do. And now that they've got it established and they're doing it consistently, they don't need to do it. They can hand it off to an assistant.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that's great. Now, the pushback I get when I talk to people about this is that if they've done more than one shoot on a card, and so they go, well, I don't want to apply the keywords on import because it's like three different places. And so, you know, there's a couple options you have. One option is to do three imports, because you can check the boxes, right? You can choose what goes in and what goes out. Or do if they're related at all, do broad keywords for that one import and then fine-tune a little bit afterwards.
Absolutely. And because you can select, like, a big range of images, so, like, basically, so I just got back from Germany, which is why I keep saying those, you know, this example. But I shot in Munich, I shot on the ICE train, and I shot in Berlin. So, you know, I had images on one card from all of those places. Mm-hmm. So as I imported it in, I just put in, you know, Germany. But then I selected the whole range of Berlin, typed in Berlin, the whole range of the ICE train, typed that in. So within, like, you know, three selections, I had my keywords for all of those images, even though they were on different cards. And I personally, I actually do one extra step. I use Lightroom to import my images, but I actually take the images off of my card first and put them on my hard drive. I just copy them using the Finder, because then when I import them into Lightroom, I actually copy and convert to DNG at the same time. So I'm using the DNG workflow,
which
is something I could totally do just on import. I don't know why I do it in two steps, but
We have our quirks, right?
We are human.
But I'm glad you brought up the DNG thing, because I haven't really talked about this much with it. What do you see as the advantages to the DNG workflow? And you maybe want to start out with what DNG is, and then we'll go from there.
Okay, so a quick, just 2 minute, what is DNG? DNG is just a way to write a file format, but the benefit of DNG is that it's publicly documented. So any software developer could go up on Adobe.com and figure out how to write a DNG file. So right now, one of the issues that face photographers is that many of the camera manufacturers are writing their RAW files in proprietary file formats, which moving forward 20, 30, 40, 50 years, I really don't think is a good idea because I don't want to be dependent on my camera manufacturer to open those files. So I convert my files to DNG because I know in the future that more and more software developers, well, any software developer that goes up right now can open a DNG file. And I would rather have more people be able to open my files. It just kind of guarantees the longevity of being able to open them, and it offers competition. And competition is always good. If you've got more people that can open your files and they're all trying to do a better job of it, then me as a photographer, I'm the one who's going to benefit at the end because there'll be competition out there.
And so, it has some other little benefits. It compresses a little bit without losing data, right?
It does. It makes my files a little bit smaller. Yeah. But the other thing that I really like, because I do go back and forth between Lightroom and Bridge, mm-hmm. because I do a lot of image compositing, and sometimes it's just easier for me to use Bridge, because Bridge can use smart objects and right. hand things off to Photoshop maybe a little more eloquently than Lightroom can in its version right now. And if I use DNG, because Lightroom works with a database, all the information is being stored in the database, but I can just select the files that I'm going to want to use in Bridge and just export all that information that's in the database into each file. And actually go into the DNG file. Whereas if I was working with RAW files, I would have to deal with the RAW file plus the little sidecar file, which is the little set of instructions, because Adobe doesn't write back to the RAW file formats because they're proprietary. We don't want to accidentally put something in the wrong place and break the file for the camera manufacturer. So instead, if you're using DNG, you know, all you have to do is write it, and we know where to write it in the DNG because it's a publicly documented specification for a file format. There's even a place in the file format that says, you know, if you're a camera manufacturer and you have proprietary information because you make the camera and you make the lens and you know about mm-hmm. the sensor, you have, if you have special advantages and proprietary data, put it here. We just need to know where people are putting information so that we don't put something in the wrong place and accidentally break the file. So.
And those little sidecar files that she's referring to, the XMPs.
Yes, they're based on XMP.
So that's what happens when you have a folder full of 40 RAW shots and you do some work on it, and then you open the folder up and suddenly you got 80 files and there's 40. Those other 40 are the files that have the data that's associated with those RAW files. DNG gets around that because it's all packaged up in one file format.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's very cool. Okay, so DNG's making you a happy camper then right now.
It is. It is. Yeah. The only word of caution I would say is for those of you who use the camera manufacturer software, you just need to check and make sure that they can open DNG files.
Cause yes.
Otherwise, if they can't, then you would definitely want to keep both your RAW files and the DNG files.
Yes, yes.
But I'm confident. I love the DNG conversion that Adobe Camera Raw gives me, so I'm actually, the only reason I keep my RAW files is so I can demo converting RAW files to DNG files.
That's right, that's right. So do you use on import, going back to import mm-hmm. real quick, do you use the automatic backup feature that you can do on import where you can save those files to a different place, or how do you?
I don't, but the only reason that I don't is because I delete a lot of photos.
Uh-huh.
So there's two features in the import dialog box. One, you can batch rename your files. And two, you can back them up to a secondary location. But because I already have them on my hard drive, when I convert them to DNG, that is my secondary.
Oh, I see. That's right.
That's my secondary location.
Right.
And I do throw away a significant number of images. Mm-hmm. I shoot a lot, and I know a lot of people don't ever throw away anything.
Right.
I'm perfectly fine. Like,
okay, but I want to ask you about that because, you know, one thing that I talk about in my workshops is I don't like people to throw away their images when they're looking at them on their camera.
No, I don't throw them away.
So at what point do you make your throwaway decisions?
So I've brought up the import dialog box in Lightroom.
Right.
And I've said to import and convert to DNG. And then I make a first pass through all my images. So in the library module, I view the image at 100%. Not 100%, the fit in window where I can see it as big as possible on my monitor. And I use my right arrow key and I just move from image to image. And if I don't like it, I tap the X key, which basically flags it as a reject.
Yes.
So then I go all the way through the whole shoot and then I just filter based on the flag, the X flag, the mm-hmm. reject flag, select them all and delete them.
Yeah.
And then I'll batch rename. And that's why I don't batch rename on import, because I know I'm going to throw some away. And of course, being tidy, I batch rename with a giant sequence. So every year I start over at one, you know, and then I don't want any holes in my sequence, so.
So I'm feeling much more comfortable about this throwing away thing now that I know that you actually look at it on the LCD and you've got,
absolutely. I don't throw away in camera.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. No. Terrific. And maybe we should talk about adding metadata on import and how you can set up those little presets. Are you using that at all?
I am. So yeah. One other feature when you import, you can set up metadata templates. So that's primarily your IPTC information. So for me, it would be my copyright information, my contact information, my email address, my web address, because I want that information in the file, right? And like I mentioned, if I'm using DNG, I can actually push the information from the Lightroom database into the files so that when I hand off that file to an art director or after I make it into a JPEG or a Photoshop file or something, if one art director buys the image and then they leave the company and the next art director comes along and says, well, I don't know where this image came from, all they have to do is look at the metadata. And you can include other metadata templates. Like I have metadata templates that have rights usage. So if I sell an image to be used on the web, that's a very different price point and very different set of rights than if I sell it for a publication in North America for a limited print run of 300,000 images or something like that. So I have other little templates that just contain that information. So when I import, I do the very generic stuff. My contact information, my copyright information, my URL for my web address. And then later on, as I'm selling images or giving images to, you know, different art directors, then I can use these other little templates that just say, okay, you can buy it. You've bought it for this. You've purchased it for this.
Yeah.
And because it's all in the file, it's so easy for them to look at the file and go, oh, you know, I actually haven't purchased this image. I can't use it for this. And the contact information's right there too, so they can just contact the photographer.
And I think this is really important to always have your contact information with every photograph that goes out into the wild. And I think the safest way to do it is to add it on import, and then it will persist. The only instance where it doesn't persist is say for web still. In Photoshop, we'll strip out a lot of those fields. So the other thing I say is, when you export, if you're using Lightroom, export out of Lightroom is great. Export out of other applications. Export out of Photoshop, it's great. Just don't use Save for Web, because I think it's really important that photographers always have their information associated with their photos.
Yeah. I agree. I'm smiling because it's actually a feature of Save for Web that it strips all of that out, because we're trying to give you the smallest file size possible. So it will actually leave your copyright data, but it strips out everything else. So like your contact information. So that probably is not really a good thing.
Yeah.
And in Lightroom, you have the option, because people do want it, they want to minimize what gets exported. So we do have that option on export as well.
And, you know, and we won't talk about here about those kilobytes that get stripped out, but, you know, I really want to lobby for even then to leave it in there. But that's another conversation, isn't it?
No, I would recommend that you leave it in.
Yeah, leave it in. So anyway, Save for Web. So now you have your stuff in there. I want to kind of change gears just for a second.
Okay.
In class and when you're showing people Lightroom, what sort of questions... Where are they getting stuck, or what sort of questions keep coming up a lot? Is it in the library module, the develop module? Where are they going? Please tell me the answer.
I think the biggest hesitation. Well, I think the biggest there's two. The biggest hesitation is just why Lightroom over Bridge?
That's a great one.
I'm using Bridge right now. Mm-hmm. I was happy with Bridge, and why should I use Lightroom? And it's based on a database. And when some people hear database, they just want to go screaming from the room. But
right.
It's not a big deal, the database thing. It actually is quite an advantage, because once you have your images cataloged in a database, and we don't make you move your images or anything. I mean, I told you, I'm very obsessive compulsive. I have all my files in all my little folders, and I don't want my application to move those files. I put them in the place specifically. So Lightroom does not have to move your files. You can have your files on your local drive. You can have your files on a removable drive, wherever you want to store your files. But Bridge, see, when you work with Bridge, which is just a file browser, if I point Bridge to a drive, it can see what's on the drive. But if I take that drive offline, Bridge doesn't It's like what drive? I don't see I don't see the drive.
Right.
So Lightroom, if you've made Lightroom aware or imported the files that are on that external drive and they're on the external drive, if you unplug the drive, Lightroom still knows, you know, you have some files on that other drive and I can see them and I can take a look at them and I can go ahead and, because we build thumbnails in the database, so I can see them, I can arrange them, I can make collections of them, I can, you know, put them in different folders and things like that.
Yeah.
And then the database, because it's all in a database, it makes searching so much easier. I can search based on the EXIF data of the file, on the IPTC information, on my keywords.
And the database is really out of your way. It's not like I never go, I'm working in a database here.
No.
I always feel like I'm just working on my pictures, and yet I can find them.
Exactly.
Sort of thing. Right,
exactly.
Right.
And then you can have multiple. We actually are trying to stay away from the word database because it is kind of the scary word.
It's kind of a turnoff, actually.
I know. So we're calling them catalogs. How about a catalog? Isn't that nice?
I like catalogs. So it's much more friendly than database.
I can have as many catalogs as I want. So like I mentioned that I was just traveling, and so I shot like, I don't know, about 2,000 images. And so yesterday I went through the images, and they're all in one catalog, which was my catalog from Germany, and they're all on my laptop. And I've gone through, and I've rated them all, and I've renamed them all, and added my metadata, and I've done all of this stuff to this catalog. And the cool thing is, when I get home, all I need to do is transfer the catalog and all the images to my other hard drive, and then I have, like, my big Uber catalog on my desktop machine at home, and I just say, okay, all that work I did while I was on the road on my laptop, ingest that small catalog of Germany into my big catalog, and it just brings in all that information, so I don't lose any of the work that I did on the road, like the collections, things like virtual copies, which are quite nice. If I want to see an image, you know, one image in black and white and the other image in color, I can actually make what's called a virtual copy. Or if I wanted to do one high contrast, one low contrast, whatever you want to do, you can experiment around with absolutely no penalty, because you only have one file on the hard drive, and you're just telling Lightroom, in the database or in this catalog, put one set of instructions for high contrast and put another set of instructions for black and white. So as far as the catalog and database goes, there's so many advantages to it.
There are. And we're just talking about kilobits of data instead of full working copies, which will just fill up your hard drive really fast.
And history is another huge one
for me. I love history.
Because in Lightroom, you can quit.
Yeah.
And then come back to the catalog tomorrow or next week, and all the history's there. So you know exactly what you've done to a file. Unlike Photoshop, where, you know, when you close the file, the history goes away.
I've got kind of hooked on the snapshots thing, too, along the way. Well, you know, that's really terrific. You know, I just wanted to save 1 minute because I wanted you to talk a little bit about Window Seat. And just tell folks, because, you know, as photographers, we're always sort of thinking about a project or wondering, you know, is there a project that we could do? And this is a good one. This is a good story.
Thanks. So Window Seat came about because I'm actually terrified of flying. And I was offered this position at Adobe, which I traveled, you know, like 200 days out of the year and, you know, take the train once a year and otherwise am flying the rest of the time. And somehow, you know, putting the camera between me and what was outside the window kind of separated me from the fact that I'm going, 400 miles an hour at 30,000 feet, where it's, you know, negative 60 degrees outside. So for me, it was kind of a way to get over my fear of flying, which I don't think anyone ever gets over a fear of flying. In fact, I don't think I'm the weird one. I think all of you who are not afraid of flying are the weird ones because of the reasons I just mentioned.
Right.
So the thing was, is I was traveling all around, but really what I was seeing was, you know, like the airport, the inside of a cab, the inside of a hotel, and then the inside of a conference room, and then maybe another cab, maybe another airport, maybe another hotel. So I was looking for something that was kind of anything that would inspire me.
Yes.
And so I started, you know, this collection of images taken out the window seat, and I just kept collecting them. When I first did it, I was shooting film, and that's how long ago I started. And
you know, it's about, you know, we have obviously a wonderful collection of images in the book, but you shot a lot of them, didn't you?
I did.
You did. And another thing is that, you know, when we take pictures out the window, that's not necessarily the best rendition of that picture. And you talk a little bit about how to really bring out the shot, right?
Yeah, they don't really go outside and clean the windows very often.
Yeah, that's it.
You know, so I actually get all those terrible windows that everyone else gets too.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you put your aperture at like f4 or whatever, you know, what you can get it to, it won't focus on the window, right? Because it's you're going to focus so far out that it won't be in focus. So, you know, certainly there are times when the window seat, the window is so horrid that you just can't shoot, or maybe you're behind the engine and the jet, you get kind of like these wiggly lines. But you know, that could be a project too, right? Like the wiggly earth or something.
The wiggly line, yes, the heat thermal out the window. That's getting kind of specialized, though, isn't it?
But you know, at this point, I actually think about, you know, okay, if I'm leaving San Jose in the morning, you know, what side of the plane I want, because I want to be on the right-hand side of the plane because we're going to go around the salt flats because they always take off the same way. So you actually start thinking like, okay, well, if I'm going to fly back from New York, which side do I want to be? Oh, if I'm going up to Vancouver, where will the mountains be?
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. So we have window seat here. I encourage you to flip through it and take a look at it. If they want to find out more about what you're up to these days, where's the best place to go?
For Lightroom, I think the best place to go is a URL called projectphotoshoplightroom.com.
Mm-hmm.
I have about a dozen movies posted up there, and they can download those for free.
Oh, nice.
If they're looking for my own work, that's on jkost.com. So that's jkost.com.
K-O-S-T,
or if they're looking for training on Photoshop, I just finished up my series of DVDs with Software Cinema. And so you can go to software-cinema.com.
Great. Thank you so much for coming by and talking about Lightroom and the book.
Excellent.
Thank you, Julia.
Thank you very much.
She's terrific, isn't she? I just really, really enjoy Julianne, and I enjoy talking with her. And, you know, just like, you know, everyone else, you know, we all have our own ways of doing things, and she has some ways that are different than mine, but I think she articulates her methods quite well. So anyway, I want to talk a little Virtual Camera Club business. First of all, the December photo gallery, which was water, is up online right now. If you haven't seen it yet, make sure you take a look at it. It's just, as always, as every month, it's a beautiful, beautiful gallery, and I think you really enjoy looking at some of the photos that Virtual Camera Club members have submitted. And we have some new entries. People who had never entered a photo assignment before are in there. So this is really worth taking a look. Now, if you haven't submitted your entry yet for January, which is Edge, do it, please. You still got a couple days. This is going to be, shall I say, a very sharp gallery. And I think you really want to be part of it. You still have a few days left. If you have any questions about how to submit, just click on the submissions button at the top of thedigitalstory.com. And it'll give you all the information that you need. I also want to remind you that we have that new feature on the site, the Digital Photography Companion book page, that has not only information about the book itself, but I'm also running content, you know, tips and things that sort of expand the book, the things that bring the book to life. And of course, one of the things I'm going to be doing is as people get the book, you know, it'll be out in March, and start using some of the techniques, we're going to have folks submit their own twist on things, or even if they come up with something new, and we'll run those on the Digital Photography Companion page, so that not only do you have the book, but then you have all this information that we keep adding that builds upon it. And I have an example right now, and it is based on a gentleman named Hans, who was here for Macworld and attended one of my classes on 5 ways to make your photos look better than everyone else's. He actually, that evening, went out and tried one of the techniques, the shoot at twilight technique, came up with a great shot, and sent it to me. And this is exactly the sort of thing that I'm talking about. So I have that running on the companion page right now. If you haven't seen Hans' photo and the story that goes with it, take a look at it. It's exactly the direction that I want to go with this area of the site. And we're basically going to be calling these things How I Did It. How I Did It. It's a new feature on the Digital Story. They'll be mainly running on the companion page. But so, you know, basically you would send us a photo, you know, using one of the techniques we've discussed, or that you've read in the book, or you came up with on your own. And basically you'll explain how you did it, and then we'll run the photo with it. And, you know, to share one of these photos or one of these How I Did It, so all you have to do is send email, and you can go to submission page and find out how to do that. And just put How I Did It up in the subject line, include your photo and the text, and I'm going to start collecting these things. So How I Did It is a new feature. It's going to be on the companion page. and I hope you participate. This is going to be a lot of fun. We're going to build as big a vault of knowledge for practical photography that we can right here. I also want to thank our sponsors, Lowepro, great makers of bags and pouches and stuff for photographers of all types, Boink Software, Photomagico, and by the way, Boink's has some announcements coming up that are going to be a lot of fun. ExpoDisc, the best way to custom white balance, you know, just about any lighting condition. They're all great sponsors of Digital Story, and I hope you support them. They all have tiles right there on the page. That's going to do it for this week. I hope you enjoyed Julianne. I hope you contribute to how I did it. And visit the site and make sure you go out and take pictures. I'll see you here next week. Bye-bye now.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, web blogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.